And we're back on The Full Story on WSHU and online at WSHU.org. If you want to join in the conversation, we have a few moments left with Oz Griebel. Toll free, 833-CALL-TFS. That's 833-225-5837. You can email us, tfs@wshu.org, or tweet at FullStoryWSHU. Before I get on to some of the other questions, and I had a whole bunch, and I wish we had a few hours with you, did Mr. Lamont call you?
No, we reached out to him.
Monty Frank called him to congratulate him.
Oh, you reached out to him.
As a congratulatory note, Monty's had a couple of interactions. He knows folks in that team better than I do, so we just made sure that Ned knows that as I said earlier, that our jobs now are to do everything we can collectively, not just Monty Frank and me, but the entire state to rally behind the governor-elect.
So I don't forget, what does the future hold for Oz Griebel?
Right now, it's the next 18 minutes of this show, and then I'll head back. At this point, my focus for the last 15 months on doing everything I knew how to work with our team, to build a team, and to win on Tuesday. So that's what the sun came up Wednesday morning, it came up yet this morning, it'll come up tomorrow morning, and this has never been about me, it's been about trying to get the structural change, the philosophical changes in there, and that didn't work out, so I'll figure something out. I'll go back to work. I love working, and need to replenish my checkbook, so I'll be out looking for a job.
Would you ever think about running for another office?
Oh, you never say never. I mean, that's not where my focus is right now. I mean, again, I think it's really important that all of us, the Stefanowski team, the Griebel Frank team, that we do whatever is appropriate to send the right signals, to be as supportive as we can. These elections are not about individuals. They're about the state, in this case, about the state of Connecticut. And if we take, and this is what's really troubled me about the duopoly of the two parties at the national and local levels, it's about the parties. And we've tried to change that, obviously not anywhere near as successfully as we want it. But regardless of our views, it's our responsibilities to make sure that Connecticut gets the leadership, in this case the governor-elect Lamont, gets the support that he and his team need to move the state forward. I mean, if we're not willing to think like that, first of all, if Monty and I weren't willing to think like that, we'd be total hypocrites, because that's what the campaign was about. And so anything we can do to be appropriately helpful and still be the old loyal opposition. Just because you want to be helpful doesn't mean you say yes sir, three bags full because of whoever's elected. Part of the responsibilities we all have, and this is one of the things we try to urge in the campaign, is let's make sure that you're getting the best and the brightest in there. Not just because they've got because they can write a big check or you think they've got the best idea. Make sure we're having robust debates. I mean, if you learn the only good thing about getting old is you know that if you don't have the right people in the room, the best people in the room, and you're not willing to listen, really get engaged in robust debate, you won't come out with the best idea. None of us have a monopoly, no matter how smart each of us may think we are, none of us have a monopoly on good ideas. Government and the people that government serves at all kinds of different levels, everywhere from the chieftains of industry to the three-year-old, this is not a linear type of responsibility. It's broad and it's got complexities associated with it. So anybody who thinks they know everything about everything is they're really kidding themselves. And so having that kind of thing of making sure that you're going into it with the right spirit, but at the same time being willing to put ideas on the table and being willing to listen to ideas, particularly ones that oppose yours, is vitally important.
I'm going to throw you a bit of a curveball.
Sure.
We've been talking about the economy. Professor Carstensen had some obviously wonderful suggestions.
Sure.
Joe McGee was here the other day.
Right.
And while for many of us the issue was taxes, taxes, taxes,
mm-hmm.
Joe says from the business community, he was hearing that it's transportation, that the other things are important, obviously, but in the meantime, if you can't get workers to be able to go back and forth to their jobs,
sure,
without spending forever on the roads or taking forever on Metro,
right,
North or Amtrak, good. So how do you fix that in
Connecticut? Well, first of all, I haven't seen Joe in a long time. It's one of those blinding statements of the obvious. Of course transportation is critical. I hope somebody didn't think it was a eureka moment. I chaired the Transportation Strategy Board in 2001 and 2005. Joe was involved in that back then, as were many. Moro Lyons was Speaker of the House from Stanford. There's no question that, and we have underinvested in transportation from the outset. You know, we cut 15, in addition to the $50 rebate that Governor Rowland did, he also cut 15 cents out of the gasoline tax in 1999, again, in anticipation of an election year. 15 cents, every penny back then, and I still think it's true now, every penny represented $15 million. So 15 times 15 is $225 million times roughly 20 years. We've underinvested to the tune of $4.5 billion. Now, maybe we didn't need all 15 cents of that gasoline tax. I get that, but we have underinvested. I think 3 or 4 cents are now crept back in during the Rowland and Malloy administrations. But the Special Transportation Fund is essentially in the red as of next year. We're not going to be able to issue bonds to do some of these very critical capital projects like the bridges that the Metro North has to cross on the way down to Grand Central. We've got major road projects up in Hartford. There's the viaduct that runs through Mile and a Quarter Viaduct that's 80 years old. You've got the Route 8, 84 interchange in Waterbury that's 80 years old. One of the sinful things that we've done, among many sinful things that nobody focuses on, is by cuts to municipality, aid to municipalities, you've underinvested in the roads and bridges within the towns because the only way they can do anything once you start cutting is going back and raising the mill rate. So this goes back to my earlier point about not having an honest conversation. The fact that we say, rah-rah-rah, transportation, great. How are you going to pay for it?
Mm-hmm.
Can we have an honest conversation? That's why the electronic tolls have to be part of this down the road. Now, I've been an advocate for that for the beginning. Lamont saying he's only going to do it on trucks, I don't think that stands a snowball's chance in hell of passing a constitutional test. Rhode Island's done it that way. The Trucker Association rightly has challenged it. Why you wouldn't have everybody paying electronic tolls going through doesn't make any sense to me. So I think you're going to see electronic tolls, particularly now with the Democrats, with a majority in both larger majority in both chambers. You'll probably see it. But how it gets done and where it gets done, I think, is absolutely critical. So, sure, I know Joe's been a big fan and Chris Brewer have been big fans of the, I think they call 30, 60, 90
right.
a minute down. And, look, I'm not an engineer, but when I looked at this in the early part of last decade, this is not a rail line running through Kansas or Nebraska. It's a rail line along the shoreline. At a time when you've got rising sea levels, the idea that you're going to straighten that out, the state doesn't own land next to those rail lines. So I think, let's be sure that when we say this is what we want, let's make sure we're having an honest conversation of how practical it is. I've always said that if you could, and this is more from the Hartford standpoint, if you could get single-seat ride service, which you cannot now get single-seat ride service from Hartford down to Grand Central, not having to get off in New Haven, and you had dependable service. You knew that if they said the train's going to run at 7 o'clock, it's going to be there at 7 o'clock, not at 7:10. And you had Wi-Fi service and modern cars with restrooms that were clean and worked. I think people stay with that. If you can get down from Hartford to New York, and I'll pick a time, inside of 2.5 hours off that time frame, and I don't have to change and drive, I think that becomes a valid thing. I don't think it's so much the time. Time is always going to be an element, but I don't think it's a difference between 30 minutes and 45 minutes if you can work on the train and do the other things that are there. So to me, it's a combination of things. The other thing that we don't talk about in an area like this is how important bus service is in other parts of the state. I mean, Metro North is one of our biggest assets, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But when you get farther out, our mass transit is bus-oriented for the largest extent. So how you fund that so people in the rural area, more suburban or rural areas, get there? Last thing I'll just say on this is that the biggest asset we have in Connecticut, you asked about about job growth and whatnot, and it didn't come up in the earlier session with Fred. Our biggest assets are our proximity to Boston and New York. We still are very competitive when it comes to commercial real estate costs, as expensive as Connecticut is. We're competitive when it comes to residential real estate costs, as expensive as Connecticut is. And on the transportation side, yes, we have congestion, but to me it's a relative day at the beach compared to inside 128 in Boston and compared to 95 going into the boroughs. We have to have that robust, effective transportation system, as Joe says, in order to compete for companies that might otherwise come to Connecticut if they can't get the back and forth into the the financial capital of the world.
Just before I switch topics,
sure.
Transportation congestion pricing.
I'm a favor of it. I think it has to be part of the process. I recommend it that we put a pilot program on the HOV lanes in 91 and 84 and going in and out of Hartford so that you could experiment with things like that and show that the Connecticut residents, that the world wasn't going to come to an end when you put electronic tolls in, and be able to experiment with things like congestion pricing. I think it along with integrating major employers here to say, okay, we're going to look at congestion pricing. Can we also talk about start times for companies? Can there be staggered start times so that not everybody's coming? I think all those things, we've got to move containers out of the Port Authority in New York and New Jersey by barge into New Haven, Bridgeport, and New London, rather than having them all come up by truck. You've got to have a number of these things, not just one, in order to get resolution.
Here's one of the things I noticed about the campaigns, and I thought of this the other day as I was sitting in traffic on the Merritt. What else? I didn't hear a vision from the major candidates, either from Bob Stefanowski or Ned Lamont. Not that you weren't one of the major candidates, but
we were an independent candidate. We weren't major.
Something along the lines of, vote for me, and in 8 years from now, I see Connecticut
right.
this way, and this is how we're going to
right.
get there. It's going to take some work and all
right.
that, but I did not hear a vision statement. Did you hear? Did you
not
hear
from
one?
Them? We said, look, 200,000 more jobs in the private sector on a net basis in 10 years. That was one goal. Secondly, we wanted to return Connecticut to national preeminence on things like transportation investment, education investment, and healthcare. One of the things that we haven't talked about in this discussion is one of our biggest assets is our health sector. Three major medical schools, a dental school, three major hospital systems. Not just Jackson Labs, but the Smilow Cancer Center at Yale, DNA research going on at UConn. There's an extraordinary asset base here. Five major health insurance companies, either headquartered in Connecticut or with major operations here. We should be using that, but everybody stays in their silos. That's how we work in New England. Everybody just stays, take care of my bottom line. The governor's got the opportunity and the responsibility to bring those various disparate entities together and say, look, we ought to be able to provide the most accessible, affordable, highest quality health care to every resident and turn that into a competitive advantage. That's the kind of aspirational thing that we need to focus on. Yeah, we got to balance the budgets. Look, that's at the top of the list in terms of how you get at this. But any one of us could go into the room with a green eye shade on and balance a budget. It's just a question of whether you raise taxes or cut expenses or do some combination of both. The issue is, where do you want that to go?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's what Monty and I tried to articulate. And I think we articulated fairly successfully, just not enough to get enough votes.
We are going to be doing a show on Monday. We've done a lot of politics in our first
sure.
week, understandably. But next week, we're going to switch a few different topics. And you and I touched on this the other day. And I just want to get your views on it again. The legalization of marijuana
right.
in Connecticut. Ned Lamont is for it.
Yep.
There's a chance now that he's going to be governor come
right.
January that it will happen.
Right.
What are your views?
Well, we were very clear on this that, look, if you want to control safety in the state of Connecticut, I believe you have to legalize it because everybody around us is going to. If you want just people to go across the border and buy it and then still have a criminal offense to possess it, I think you're creating total chaos, and I think you're just going to exacerbate some of the safety issues that come with alcohol when you legalize marijuana. So I think we've always said we think it has to be legalized. But rather than what Massachusetts did, where they did it by referenda and then went back to go to statutes and regulations, we want to do that first. So I think it's going to be done pretty quickly. But what's the age of purchase? Is it the same as alcohol, or like City of Hartford now is moving tobacco up to age 21 for purchase? Do you have 21? What
mm-hmm.
What kinds of technology do you need to detect DUI, which I understand is different technology in terms of, because marijuana stays in your system longer. But what little I've read outside of Connecticut, I believe there's greater incidence of traffic violations and accidents in Colorado, for example. Most importantly, is we would not use the, and I would be urging the Lamont administration to not use the tax revenue associated with the sale of recreational marijuana for the general fund, but rather segregate that money so that it can be used to support organizations, either state organizations or not-for-profit private ones, for those entities that deal with substance abuse and mental health. We're sitting on top of this horrific opioid crisis. And look, I'm not a scientist, but I don't believe you can segregate and say legalization of marijuana is over here and opioid use is over here. And oh, by the way, we've got mental health issues growing. This has got to be looked at in a comprehensive, holistic way. And so the monies that would come out of that, to me, have to be appropriately segregated.
Joe Ganim is going to be here next week. He's the mayor of Bridgeport, the state's largest city. You had talked about regionalism.
Right.
And you didn't say that you wanted a county form
Correct.
Of government. But you felt that the towns and the cities do need to share services.
Well,
right?
Yeah, we've said, I've been on this kick for a long time. When I first came down here and didn't realize that there was no county government in Connecticut initially. I mean, I was leading a Bank of Boston at the time here in Connecticut. We've got to get regional delivery of municipal services. People think we're ready to put you in with Khrushchev and everybody on the Gorbachev and everybody else on the Russian side as if it was a communist plot. Look, you wouldn't. None of us would design Connecticut with 169 towns today, other than the beauty of 169 towns is it causes more people to get involved in how they want their town to look. Brooklyn, Connecticut doesn't want to look like Brooklyn, New York. Mm-hmm. Doesn't want to look like state. So you get some control over that. But the idea that we have I'm going to use the 169 just for simplistic purposes, that we have 169 police chiefs, 169 fire chiefs, 169 school superintendents, nobody would do it that way. So under the heading that don't let a good crisis go to waste, there's an opportunity here. Now, we were using the COGS as our example, the councils of governments, and there's the one I know best is in Hartford, 39 towns now in that COG. And I said that hypothetically, what I would do is give every one of those towns was getting $100 in today's budget, in our first budget they would have gotten 50, and the delta of 50 would have gone to the COG. Now every one of the towns has a vote on that COG. They could vote just to give my $50 back and leave me alone. But what I would hope it would do is it would provide them an incentive. To start, you're going to have to negotiate. Any kind of consolidation on a regional basis requires negotiations with unions. I'm not talking about the state unions. I'm talking about every town that negotiates independently with their police, fire, and teachers. So it's going to take 4 to 6 to 8 years to get that done. But I think we have to go down that road. Otherwise, the old joke that had Columbus landed out somewhere out in the Pacific Ocean, there'd be one state from Maine to Florida on the East Coast, and all those congregational churches would have been out there in Oregon and Washington. They'd be the ones dealing with this. We've got to look at where the modern the beauty of Connecticut is. It is small. That's the beauty of it. And the fact that we have it on 169 towns, there's a lot of good there. But it also undermines our ability to be responsible fiscally.
You're talking about a fundamental shift for the entire state.
Over time, yeah, I am. No question.
And so how long do you think that should take?
I think it's got to take a decade. That was our point. And if you don't do this, this is what's so farcical about balancing the state budget when we cut aid to municipalities. I mean, well, look, we all pay taxes. We pay state taxes out of our left-hand pocket, and we pay local taxes out of our right-hand pocket. All the state does when they cut aid to municipalities is transfer the responsibility from our left-hand pocket to our right-hand pocket. We're still paying for the taxes. If municipal aid cuts force municipalities over these last 5 or 6 budget cycles to do one of 3 things, raise the mill rate, cut services, or do some combination of the both. You're not going to get private sector investment. You're not going to get increases in real estate, residential real estate values, unless we get our property taxes under control. This conversation, as it rightly should, has been about state taxes. But the issue, when Ned said he's going to return the property tax credit is a credit against your income tax. It's not a credit. It does nothing for your mill rate. It does nothing to help the municipality. So as I said earlier, we can't look at these things vertically. We've got to look at them in a more holistic, comprehensive way.
You probably don't remember this, but you actually said to me on the phone the other day, what are we going to talk about for an hour? The hour flew by, and I wish we had more time.
It's a real pleasure, Ron.
Oz Griebel, thank you. Please come back.
I hope so.
That is it for our show today. Julie Fredino is our engineer. Our associate producers are Christian Carter, Sabrina Garone, Natalie Chafari, Carrie Frank, digital editor, Cassie Bassler, senior editor, Ann Lopez is the producer, Terry Sheridan, our news director, and I'm Ron Ropiak. And I want to thank all of you. Oz, thank you again for being part of the full story.